This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Kim. Welcome back to the second Nightmare Before Christmas.
Woohoo! Day two.
Day two.
Two.
I always like this time of year. Isn't it fun?
I don't know. I love it. I started celebrating Christmas way early because I figured if there's ever a time we need some peace and love and joy.
Yes, we need a little Christmas right this very minute. Yeah.
I started celebrating right after Halloween. November 1st, I started listening to Dolly Parton's Christmas hits. Swear
Did you?
On the book. Yep.
I like Christmas, but mostly I like it to be over with because there's a lot of stress that goes on with the Christmas holidays.
Not this year, though.
It's never been one of my favorite holidays. Always like Halloween.
It should be relatively stress-free because nobody can get together.
I know.
So you don't have to worry about that.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So there you go. There you have it. So what kind of case you got for us on day two?
On the second day of Nightmares Before Christmas, my OTCP gave to me two parasites. A case of parasite. All right, ready? We're going over to England.
London, England. You know I can't resist.
I wish you would. But yes, in honor of us going to CrimeCon in the UK, where you can go and get your tickets by using the code OTCP and get 10% off. Yeah, come join us. But anyway, we're going to right outside of Liverpool, somewhere around
there. Come join
area.
Us and you can have a pint with us and some fish and chips.
Actually, I believe this case is kind of around where our dearest darling Nico lives.
Aw, yeah. Nico. Okay, good. I can't wait. Let's hear it. Hit me.
Ready?
Hit me. Yep.
Brian Blackwell was born in 1986 to Sydney, a retired accountant. Now, I just want to say this. Newspaper articles refer to him as Sydney. On some of the documentaries that I've seen, he is Brian Sr. with his son Brian Jr., but I am going to call him Sydney. All right?
So you call him whatever you want, Jen. It's
I'm
our
gonna.
Podcast.
So Sydney was a retired accountant, and Jacqueline, or Jackie, was an antiques dealer. And they had met years before, and then they somehow got back together and got married. Now, they were. It was both their second marriage. And Brian was their only son together. Now, Sydney did have two older children from a previous marriage. So at the age of 43, Jackie became pregnant after trying for so many years. Because, you know, once you get older, it's harder to become pregnant. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot riskier pregnancy, too. So once she found out she was pregnant, she was completely over the moon, as one would expect. And Jackie was devoted to little Brian. And while some say devoted, others say maybe a little bit controlling.
Helicopter
parenting, perfect word for it, yes. And so much so that Brian would later say his mother insisted on bathing him and washing his hair well into his teen years.
That's a little strange.
Yeah, that's, give the kid some breathing room. Come
right?
on. Mm-hmm. So when Brian was 2 years old, the family moved to the affluent village of Melling in Merseyside. So when he was young, Brian was very quiet and a bit of a loner, very studious. He loved science, English, very studious kid, loved school. Mm-hmm. His parents doted on him and would boast that one day Brian was destined to be, quote, not just a doctor, but a surgeon. At school, Brian was an excellent student, of course. He loved school. And in his teen years, kids nicknamed him the Brains. He studied for his A-levels at Liverpool College, which is a private school, with the tuition of about £7,300 or $8,700 a year. And he played tennis for the school team. So Brian had decided to become a surgeon, and he wanted to study at Nottingham University, but his parents wanted him to go to Edinburgh. Now, there's something that was said about how he accepted to go to Nottingham University, but his dad called and had it switched for him to go to Edinburgh. But I didn't get a lot of information on that.
That would be terrible, really.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you wanted to go somewhere and then your parent was like, nope, and then changed it for you.
Right. One guy that I read said it was like hearsay. The other one said, we have fact. So, well, I don't know. I'm just putting it out there.
Okay, I got you.
During his high school years, Brian started to make friends, but to do so, he became a pathological liar.
Oh.
He liked people to believe that he had accomplished a lot of stuff, which he hadn't done.
Mm-hmm.
His girlfriend, Amal Saba, was the daughter of a doctor and a fellow student at the Liverpool College. She was really innocent and naive, but she was overwhelmed by all the stories that he would tell, and she fell for him. And later she would say that she was spellbound. And not only was he a great liar, but he would make his stories look real. For example, although he could play tennis fairly well, he had convinced her that he was a professional tennis player with a Nike sponsorship deal worth £70,000 or $83,000.
And that's a lot.
Yes.
For, well, you want some proof? I'd be like, hey, buddy.
For an 18-year-old? No. Right. And yeah. He had a place in the French Open. I mean, this is like an 18, he just graduating high school here in America.
Right.
Yeah. And he even asked her to be his manager.
Oh.
And even went so far that in April of 2004, he wrote her a check for £39,000, $51,000, despite he only had like 10 bucks in his bank account. But he wrote her.
Jen, that doesn't mean anything. You can be my manager. I'll write you a check for $1 million. I can write a check for whatever
you want.
But
he would also buy her jewelry and say, here's some real diamond earrings or a real diamond ring. And even though
real diamond earrings.
Exactly. And her mom knew that they weren't real and even asked for like receipts and stuff, but he would never give them the receipts. But Amal was like so, not just naive, but she just wanted to believe him. So
mm-hmm.
She
yeah.
liked him. So she wanted to believe all this. So it became easier to accept this. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. If you're going to accept it, then you have to confront him. Then you're going to have to dump him. Then she's got to tell all her friends that
right.
she had diamond earrings.
Even the friends kind of knew it wasn't right. I mean, what are the odds of an 18-year-old kid having a Nike sponsorship?
If he's in the French Open, aren't we going to hear about that?
Yeah.
I mean, here's this 18-year-old phenom.
Right. And supposedly one of the policemen did say that he did have a sponsorship, but it was for like some store where he could maybe get a 10% discount on rackets or something like that. But it wasn't, you know what I mean? He was a good player, but he wasn't like the best player.
Well, you know what? I am sponsored by Costco then because I have a Costco card and I get a discount every time
I
use it. So I am officially sponsored by Costco.
We're sponsored also by Barnes & Noble because I get a discount there, too.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's awesome.
I think every once in a while I could be sponsored by Panera Bread, too, because I have a card there.
Yeah.
And you spend so much and you get some back.
Yeah.
So I'm co-sponsored is what it is.
We've got a lot of sponsors. Yeah.
It's true.
All right. So anyway, believe it or not, it bounced due to lack of funds.
Mm-hmm. Shocking.
But he needed to keep this act up. So Brian went to the bank in May and withdrew this £9,000 or $12,000 from a bank account that his parents had set up for his college. So he took money from his college fund to cover this check. So
yeah.
It wouldn't look like he was a liar because he is a dirty, rotten liar. But he took his college money to cover the check.
Literally.
Exactly.
Literally.
This is how good he is. Brian convinced the bank to give him the money by telling them his father had died and he needed to buy a car, which the only thing that was true was he was buying a car, but he bought the car for Amal. He bought her a $6,500 car. Now, once his parents found out what Brian had done, like with the money and the car and all this kind of stuff, his parents demanded that Amal return the car. And after this huge argument was done, they decided that Amal could keep the car, but had to pay back the money.
I wouldn't keep the car then.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't keep the boyfriend either, but that's me. Because Brian kept making all these extravagant lies about all this money, he kept filling out applications for credit cards and bank loans in his parents' name.
And, well, his dad's dead, right?
No, his dad's alive.
I know. I was...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You would think that they would know that. Okay, gotcha. So in June, his mom, Jackie, discovered all these lies and went to the bank manager to explain to her about her son. And she just never gave him another loan, no more credit cards, nothing. And Brian's parents never again trusted him with money. Never. They even went so far as to have their will rewritten to say that Brian could not inherit any money until he was at least 30 years of age. I think Sydney was 75 and Jackie was 63 at this point, or 62, somewhere around there. They were older parents. They also threw in that the fact that they didn't really like Amal and that maybe he and Amal should break up.
I think Amal's not the problem.
I'm agreeing with you.
Take that mirror and turn it around.
On July 24th, 2004, Brian used his father's credit card to make first-class airline tickets from Manchester to New York for himself and Amal. This was to make up for an earlier lie that he told in the year. Brian had asked Amal to go with him to Milan because he was going to be in a tennis tournament.
Oh, yeah.
At the last minute, he told her she couldn't go for some reason that he made up. I'm not really for sure. Brian wasn't in school for 3 days because he was in Milan at a fake tournament.
He was at the Milan Tennis Open.
Milan.
Duh.
Yep. Uh-huh. And after a while, Amal gets a text from Brian asking, said, wish me luck. I'm about to go on the tennis courts.
Here in Italy.
I know. Oh, and by the way, I met Roger Federer.
Not Roger Federer.
Mm-hmm. The Roger Federer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, see, if that was me, because I would be like, where is Roger Federer today? Like,
exactly.
Trying to track him down through the media and see where he is.
Yeah, but she trusted him. She fell for the whole thing, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, she was into him. She's young, you know? So to make up for her missing this fake trip, Brian said, you know what? I'll take you later to the U.S.
I'll take you on another fake trip.
Exactly. Nike's paying for it, and I'm going to be in another tournament there in Miami. We'll go. We'll have fun.
Oh.
Right?
Mm-hmm. The Miami Open.
Mm-hmm. So on the evening of July 25th, 2004, Brian was at home hanging pictures in his bedroom, and his parents had been out for dinner. When they returned home, the family sat down in the living room for a few drinks, and they were talking, and soon this huge argument between Brian and his father came. They started screaming at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was turned very heated. Brian flew into a rage and began beating his father with the claw hammer he had in his hand.
It's terrible.
His mother, who had been in the kitchen, ran into the room holding a carving knife and watched Brian continue bludgeoning Sydney.
I think you'd be in such a state of shock that you would not, I don't even know if you would be able to.
You could do it. If you could even move, right?
You'd be frozen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she tried to stop Brian from hitting Sydney, but he knocked her unconscious. Then he took the carving knife that she had in her hand and stabbed her 20 times, mostly in the chest, and killed her. Then he returned to his father, who still wasn't dead yet, and then stabbed him 30 times.
Oh my gosh.
Until he was gone.
That's a lot of strength
anger.
And energy. Yeah. Like
anger.
It's...
That's nothing but rage and anger.
Yeah, totally.
So after this violent attack on his parents, Brian took a shower, then took the blood-stained clothes that he had on and set fire to them. Then he called a cab. And when the cab arrived, Brian said, take me to Amal's house, you know, gave him the address. And he also told the cab that he was excited because they were going to go on a holiday to New York, or actually to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Cab driver said he was calm and cool and collected, not
psychopath.
Care in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was some time before that Brian had planned this to take himself and Amal to the United States. So when they arrived in New York, Brian had arranged for a limo to pick them up at the airport and take them to the Plaza Hotel, where they stayed at the Presidential Suite.
Mm.
That's a lot of cash.
Fancy smancy.
A lot.
Well, and also, I'm guessing he didn't think this out, because with the ending of his parents, the ending of his cash flow. But I guess that didn't occur to him.
He had their credit cards.
Thurgles are going to go get, you know, canceled once they, you know.
But it was all about keeping up this lie.
Right, right. For this moment.
So he was only thinking that far ahead.
Yep.
So while at the hotel, they ordered champagne, caviar, lobster. The next morning, Brian took Amal shopping on Fifth Avenue. Anything she wanted, she got. They then traveled to Miami. They went to San Francisco. They went to Barbados. They were living large wherever they went.
Wow.
And Brian never did play in the tennis tournament, surprisingly. Can you believe it?
I guess he was just having so much fun.
So much fun. Well, when they were in Miami, Brian told Amal that the tournament was canceled due to inclement weather. Which, does Miami ever have bad weather days? I mean, except hurricane season, but that's not until September.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. But anyway, Brian spent a total of £30,000 or 40,000 UK or USD on his father's credit cards in just 3 weeks. They vacationed for 3 weeks.
Wow. Wow.
Can you imagine? That's a really nice car.
No.
That's a lot of house payments.
I guess he was like, I'm going to go to prison, so I might as well.
I don't even think he was thinking about prison. I think he thought he could lie it out, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
Brian's behavior throughout the trip was totally normal. Like, Amal had no idea anything was going on. There was not even the slightest bit of anything to suggest anything was wrong. Brian wasn't under stress, he wasn't anxious, and he honestly didn't have a care in the world. He was out there having fun. Brian even pretended to call his parents to check in.
That was my next question.
Even like, though he knew his parents' bodies were decaying in pools of their own blood.
Oh.
Now, you might think, well, how does the neighbors, doesn't anybody, they're gone 3 weeks, what about the parents? Well, before the parents, like 2 days before Brian left for his trip, the parents were also leaving on their normal, I guess, yearly holiday to Spain. So they had told the neighbors to please check in, and if there's any mail on the, I guess the mailman didn't deliver to the door. They just delivered the driveway, maybe, and they asked the neighbors to take all the mail and put them on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
The couple returned to England on August 12th, and Brian, at this point, was thinking that his parents' bodies would have been found while he was away, and he was shocked that they hadn't been. So now he had to come up with an explanation of where his parents are. They went to the house, and Brian pretended to, like, go in. Right? Go into the house and then came back out and said, oh my gosh, I'm locked out of my house and I won't be able to get in until my parents come back from Spain. So he crashed with Amal and her parents. And Brian would try to call him and reach him while on holiday. And nope, no answer. Couldn't get in touch with him at all. So a week later, Brian received his A-level results from Liverpool College. Now, A-levels basically is, I had this explained to me by all of our UK podcaster friends. Basically, like if we would take the SATs or ACT tests for college, it helps navigate. Whereas we get numbers on theirs, they actually get letter grades. Brian received A grades for math, biology, chemistry, and Spanish. I mean, he was set. He could go any college he wanted to, is what it seemed.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thrilled beyond belief that he received such high scores. But he was also, he told friends how disappointed he was that he wasn't able to get in touch with his parents so they could congratulate him on what a great job he did.
Oh, he did a great job, all right. He finished the job.
Yep. And in the meantime, just to keep up appearances, Brian would go to the house and mow the lawn to make sure nobody came
through. Knowing that his parents are in there dead, dying, decaying.
He even went into the house to get the hammer.
He would take it with them so they couldn't find it.
And he would also use the computer to apply for 13 more credit cards and other loans in his parents' name.
No way.
And he made sure he wouldn't look at his parents' bodies while he was in the house.
Jen, am I the only one that's thinking the smell alone would... How could you even step in there?
Oh, God. On September 5th, 2004, a neighbor went to deliver a package and noticed an unpleasant smell coming from the Blackwell house. When he looked at the door and the windows, they were all black. And it was moving because it was covered in flies.
Oh my God, I knew you were going to say that. Oh my God, that's so gross.
He went to the side of the house and peeked in through the kitchen window. And at first, he thought he saw that the house had black carpeting.
It was flies.
The flies were covering the floors, the windows, everything.
Oh, that is a nightmare. Oh.
Yes. He notified police, and within 20 minutes they came, and they saw the bodies of Sydney and Jackie were in an advanced state of decomposition, and they were covered in flies and maggots. And due to the state of the bodies and the vast amount of blood on the walls and floors, police initially believed that the couple had been shot. Mr. Blackwell, or Sydney, was in an armchair in the living room, and he was still holding his glasses. And Jackie's body had been dragged to the bathroom and left lying face down.
Why?
I don't know.
Why would he even move her?
I don't know. The post-mortem examination revealed that the Blackwells had been killed sometime in July. They'd been there for 6 weeks without anyone noticing.
Unbelievable.
The next day, police locate Brian at Amal's house and inform him about the death of his parents. Now, Brian reacts like you would, first stunned.
Cue the fake psychopath crier.
And then cry, right. Mm-hmm. And then he claimed that it couldn't be his, it can't be my parents. They're in Spain. You know, he goes through the denial. He's doing all those stages of grief thing. So police want to question Brian because he was the last known person to have seen them alive.
Uh-huh.
And when they got to speaking with him, they started to think he was the suspect because he was just acting very strange.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, without any context whatsoever, he asked an officer if it was cold in prison.
What?
He just asked him out of the blue, you think it's cold in prison? Is it cold in prison? Yeah.
Yes, it is, because I watch all the prison shows. Yes, it is.
They arrested him. They're like, we're going to arrest him. So they bring him in for interrogation. And during the whole time, he was very arrogant. And the police felt that Brian thought he was smarter than they were and that he could easily lie his way out of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Brian claimed that he was innocent and he would, always said, I couldn't have murdered them. I was in the United States when the murders happened. And I didn't have keys to the house. I was locked out. It can't be me. I didn't do it. You've got the wrong person.
Always.
While he was being interrogated or interviewed, police started to search the Blackwell house and the Saba house. And at the Saba's house, in the garage, they discovered Brian's duffel bag. And, quote, it makes me laugh, but not really. But they said at one point the Amal family had asked Brian to put his bag in the garage because it smelled so badly. And, if he is a jock and he is, it's sweaty clothes that makes it smell bad.
Right.
So when my husband was working out, I used to hate opening his duffel bag. But anyway, neither here nor there. It was smelly, so they made him put the duffel bag in the garage. And inside that duffel bag, though, was the hammer and a set of house keys to Brian's house.
Color me shocked.
And also in the meantime, police get to talking to some kids from the next town over. And they said that Brian had tried to pay them to set fire to his house.
Well, he's not very smart now, is he?
Yeah. And the funny reason why they didn't do it for the money?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do it because they thought Brian was an undercover police officer.
Well, good for them, really, because they would have been in a heap of trouble and he might be free.
So after 2 days of police interviews, Brian admitted to killing his parents. He claimed it was self-defense. Brian was just holding the hammer, hanging pictures, when he and his dad started to fight. And then Brian said his dad stood up and was going to hit Brian, so Brian attacked him with a hammer. Then he said his mother, Jackie, came in, and Brian hit her with a hammer. This maybe would have worked, but the autopsy on Sydney showed that he had been attacked from the back while sitting in his chair.
I was just going to say, he was still sitting in his chair holding his glasses, mm-hmm. So that does not
tell you exactly.
Yeah.
See, you're forensically good, Camille.
Thanks, I try. I listened. Mm-hmm. I used my police smarts to put that together.
You put your listening ears on.
I did.
And not only that, a lot of the knife wounds that Sydney had were all defensive wounds. Brian said it was a, quote, split-second thing, and, quote,
you're right.
I just couldn't believe what I'd done. He also told investigators that before his dad died, he went over and held his hand and talked to him for a while, telling him he still loved him.
Oh, way to go, Brian. What a guy.
Asshole. Now, of course, everyone was shocked. Neighbors all described Brian as polite and quiet and a clever young man. He was brilliant. He had a brilliant mind, and he was so studious. He always studied so hard, and, you know, he played tennis. He was a tennis player.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one day would get a Nike scholar. Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, sponsorship.
And nobody ever imagined that this could happen to such a nice, normal family.
They never do. They never do. Watch the news.
They never do. So police charged Brian with murder, and they were ready to take him to trial for murder. And they believed Brian had thought about killing his parents and he had planned the entire thing. They thought it was all premeditated and it was all about the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
But while waiting for trial, not one, but a team of 5 psychiatrists examined Brian, and they all agreed that he had narcissistic personality disorder, or NPD.
Mm-hmm.
People with this disorder typically fantasize about unlimited brilliance, power, success. Yep. They fly into a rage if their fantasies are challenged or threatened. They have a strong sense of entitlement. Whole bunch of stuff, and they're great liars. The reason NPD sufferers are so convincing to others is that part of them believes their inflated fantasies themselves.
Yeah.
Now, there's 13 signs of NPD. I won't go into all of them, but most people do show mild symptoms or on maybe 2 or 3 of these, you know? But Brian, he checked off every box.
Wow.
That's a problem for the prosecutor, right? NPD is very rare, and it's usually misdiagnosed. But to have 5 separate doctors have the same diagnosis, it's pretty sure that he does have this disorder.
I would say so.
So prosecutors are kind of, they knew that the defense would use this to their advantage because prosecution could prove Brian was lying, but the defense could come back saying, well, you know what? That's part of his disorder.
Yep, part of his disease.
Yep. Another symptom was NPD people, or people with NPD, they fly into a rage when challenged. Well, that's what Brian did, and he's got the disorder. All the experts agreed that since he had this narcissistic personality disorder, he was not responsible for his actions.
Well, you know what? I might buy that, except for the fact that he panicked because he had promised his girlfriend a trip. And so he got the money cut off from his mother. So he's like, now what am I going to do?
Well,
my mind would say that was it. That's when the murder ball went in motion, right?
Well, like you said before, he knew that things would get cut off if his parents died. 9 months after his arrest, Brian's trial began June 2005 in the Liverpool Crown Court, presided over by Judge Justice Royce and Prosecutor David Steer. Now, Steer described Brian as, quote, a highly abnormal young man, adding that an NPD diagnosis was unusual for someone his age. And quite honestly, some claim that since his parents were always doting on him, they were actually feeding into his disorder and that possibly they made Brian the way he was.
Mm-hmm.
to me, that seems like victim shaming. So I'm going to stay far, far away from that. David Steer also stated that there was nothing to indicate that the murders were premeditated, but the murders had been a case of narcissistic rage. And this is the first time NPD had ever been used as a criminal defense in a British case. In a letter written by Brian that was read in court, quote, "For every moment of every day, I wish I could turn back the hands of time. I eternally long to be a little boy again at a time when everyone really loved each other, when we could have a happy time and be a family once more. I miss them more than anything in the world. The guilt will punish and haunt me for 24 hours a day for the rest of my life."
And it probably will. And he probably does miss them, but he reacted out of control.
In an attempt to find a motive for the killings, David Steer suggested Brian's parents may have discovered his plans to go to America with his girlfriend and tried to stop him. And this might have induced a rage that drove him to murder his parents. However, there's only evidence of the fact that Brian's parents were loving and supportive to him. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
They can't find any other.
Yeah. No, I think he probably did. Either they found out or he had this planned. And he was backed in a corner. He figured he had to do this. Because if he didn't do this, then his relationship
And this
with
was
Maul
the day before he was leaving, so
would all
they
come
didn't,
crashing down.
How would you explain that to his family? How would you explain that to his parents who already knew he was lying about things and with the money? And they were keeping a short string on him financially. But anyway, due to Brian's suffering from severe NPD, and even though cases of diminished responsibility are extremely rare, Judge Royce accepted the plea to drop the charges of murder in favor of manslaughter. Brian Blackwell admitted manslaughter with diminished responsibility on June 29, 2005, and he is sentenced to life imprisonment. The judge then told the court that it was of his opinion that Brian would never be fit for release.
I would agree with that.
Now, and unfortunately, we'll never know what happened because Brian is a dirty liar. I mean, he will never tell the truth, or it's doubtful. I mean, remember, he does have that narcissistic personality disorder. They just think that Brian freaked out because he was in danger of being exposed, and he didn't want Amal to find out and have to cancel the trip, and all that was going through his mind.
See, that's what I think, because he had already canceled the trip on her once, and it was so close to the departure date, he couldn't do it again.
And she's a beautiful girl.
Is she pretty?
So pretty. Pretty, pretty girl.
What's she doing now, do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I'll also add this. This is kind of fun.
In a sad, sort of sick way.
No, I love this. I think this is great. In February of 2007, Brian appeared at Liverpool Crown Court, where he was ordered to repay the £37,000 or $49,000 American dollars under the Proceeds of Crime Act 2002, which prevents criminals from benefiting financially from their crime. Hmm. He had to pay all that shit back.
How did he make the money, though?
I have no idea. Slowly, he's got all of his life to pay it back.
Yeah, but you know, in jail, they only make about
here
7
in the States.
Cents an hour.
Yeah, here in the States, they do. Hmm. But that's just like pouring vinegar on those wounds. I couldn't have been happier.
But he's going to stay in prison
for the rest
life,
of his life. Yeah. Okay. He's no chance of parole or anything like that.
And he probably,
as far as I know.
He probably did think he could get away with this forever. And he'd be fine.
Yeah. The police, in one of the documentaries, the police officer is like, you can tell he thought that he was smarter than us. No matter what we would say, he would turn our words around and he would come back. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's because he's a professional tennis player, Jen.
Oh, that's
They're
what
smart.
Happens. Mm-hmm. With a Nike deal, too. Damn.
He traveled the world playing.
He did. In his head.
He did.
That's Brian Blackwell.
That's
something. Second day. Yeah.
Second day. And if you didn't know or haven't heard before, every day of our Nightmare Before Christmas features the... sadly, the amount of murder victims. So day one had one, day two, which is today, has two. So tomorrow we'll have three, and so on and so on and so on. So yeah.
Yeah, there we go. So and, we've got two down. We've got 10 more to go.
10 more days before tomorrow, we all have Christmas.
We'll be number three.
Three.
Third Nightmare Before Christmas. Camille job. Will bring to me. Mm-hmm.
Jen.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job. You're welcome. Hey, you know what? Until then, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Oh, bye-bye.
Love ya.
And happy holidays.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at wetalkofdreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya. He had convinced her that he was a professional tennis player with a Nike sponsorship. They even had the Will We Witten.
I love when the Wills We Witten. Hold on for one more day. I know the things are
I'm sorry.
I know that they can change. Hold on for one more day. Break free from the chains. I know
did
someday
I put this wrong?
Somebody's going to bring me.
And was going to hit Brian, so Brian attacked him with a hanger. Not a hanger. That'd be a totally different podcast, but this was a hammer. Brian attacked him with a hammer.